All right, beloved listeners, welcome back to yet another episode of Wings Over Water, Creativity and Recovery. Kathy Moser with my favorite co-host, Gypsy. And this is going to be my first show that I have a guest host, and we are both in my car. I know I promised you that there was going to be a show soon that was not recorded in my car, but this is not it. Sorry. So today we are going to experiment on the topic of humility. What is it? Why does it matter? What isn't it? How does it affect our recovery, and how does it affect our creativity? So I have a couple stories to tell about humility, and then we're going to put Gypsy on the mic here. The first one is when I came into recovery, I had a friend who loved language, and he said that the word humility comes from the word humus. Not like hummus, the Middle Eastern dip. No, not that, but humus, meaning dirt. And it's the word means it's the low-lying soil, humus. And what's cool about the low-lying soil is that the way that nature works is that that's where all the nutrients end up. So the low-lying soil is the most nutrient-rich soil. And he talked about that as being a way to think also about humility, that it's nurturing and nutrient-rich. Where we could see that pride and arrogance might be like empty calories. You know, humility might be more like kale, and pride might be more like potato chips. I'm sorry if you don't think that's funny. We are both really tired, and so like a lot of stuff is funny that might not actually be funny. My other story I wanted to tell about humility in action that relates to creativity is when I was in college, I took an ear training class. If you're not a musician, ear training is this thing where you learn to hear notes and be able to write them down, and also to hear rhythms and write them down, and to hear chords and write them down, and to look at the paper and sing it straight out of the air without any instrument. So sight singing and ear training. And it's a really repetitious, could be perceived as dull and boring, very meticulous work that you do over and over again that lays so much foundation for having freedom of expression as a musician. I was a freshman in college with a bunch of other freshmen in college in music, and we thought we were hot shots, and we had this ear training teacher. His name was Ed. He was kind of stupid looking. I'm just going to tell you straight out. He always looked like it was pretty much lucky that his clothes all ended up on his body.
Sorry, Ed, if you're listening.
Hey, Ed's the hero of the story. It's going to work out well for Ed, really. You're going to see. It's actually, so yeah, his shirt wasn't always tucked in correctly. He was doing like the white socks with black shoes thing at a point at which it really wasn't cool. His hair did not really look like it had been combed or brushed or anything like that. He was a little bit overweight, and man, we were not nice to this guy. I mean, he showed up every day and he did his job, and he brought us through the whole process of learning how to ear train, which is not it's a kind of a thankless job for a teacher, and not to mention that we were kind of snotty kids. What happened was, get all the way through the year to the last day of class, and Ed is a piano player. We know this about him, but we never really seen him play besides just doing the like 1 2 3 2 1 1 2 3 2 1 2 3 4 3 2 1 4 1 stuff like that. The last day of class, he comes in and he plays for us, and he is a complete fire-breathing dragon behind the piano. He actually plays, at one point he lies down on the piano bench and continues to play outrageously, brilliantly great. So much energy, so much passion, so much chops. And the thing that astounds me about it is that if he'd come into the classroom and played for us the first day, we would have sat down, shut up, and did everything he said. And we would have given him no flack. We would have just like totally respected him. But he didn't tip his hand, and he just came in humbly and did his job every single day with us. Took all kinds of grief from us, you know, and then the last day showed us that he had this magnificent talent. So I always think of that piano teacher, Ed, and I feel like he's the first person in my life who really showed me what humility was. You know, this is like 20 years later or more, and I've never forgotten him. So that's what I have to say about humility.
Thank you.
Miss Gypsy, you have any thoughts on this matter?
So, I don't know, we were talking just before turning the microphone on, and I was saying that humility is a topic that I don't really often have that much to say about, which is surprising for me. Because usually I have plenty to say about plenty of things. But lately I've been doing a lot of thinking about humility and its opposite, like we were talking about, which I think the obvious pick out of a hat opposite that I would have picked would be arrogance, but I actually don't think that's the opposite of humility for me today. I think the opposite is self-centeredness, because what I've learned in my process of recovery is that when I work in any kind of service structure, that's where, like, I really find myself coming to terms with where I'm at spiritually on the humble plane. And oftentimes I'm eating a piece of humble pie during the service meetings just because I need that to get through. And in terms of my creativity, like a lot of the work I do in the creative world currently, it's just as important for me to remember that I'm not the center of the universe. And that sometimes I may not have the answer. And somebody, oftentimes the person that I least want to hear it from is the one that has the answer that I need. That's kind of where, like, my journey has been at lately. And the other story that came to mind while you were telling stories, Kathy, and maybe you can actually tell it because it's a story you just told to me, was the yoga teacher, the Kundalini yoga teacher. And this came to mind for me because one of the things I do to further myself creatively involves showing up every other week. And, you know, this past week we were concerned that not that many people were going to show up, but I had made a commitment to be consistent and to show up. And so I determined that I was going to go whether or not people show up. And so Kathy told me this really cool story that I think also ties into humility.
I heard about this story from Tommy Rosen, who is a Kundalini yoga teacher and also runs a program called The Yoga of Recovery, and also has an online conference that's coming up in May called Recovery 2.0. It's going to be online. I will post more information about it and talk more about it. You can, in the meantime, look it up if you want to. It's Recovery 2.0. It's all different kinds of people talking about meditation, yoga, creativity, and recovery. So anyway, I went to a workshop with him, and he told a story that the man who brought this Kundalini yoga practice to the United States came here and rented a space in San Francisco and put up flyers and stuff like that, and nobody came to the classes. And Tommy said that for a year, this guy showed up at the space where the class was to be held and taught the full class to an empty room, in order to just hold the space for his vision, basically. So I love the humility of that.
Yeah, so, I mean, that story, you know, to me, like, our addiction, like, as addicts, part of the nature of the disease is the isolation, you know? And whether we like it or not, we're social creatures. Like, we have to interact with people. I have to interact with people. There's many times throughout the day where I just want to go and you know, hike the Appalachian Trail for the rest of my life, but that's just completely unrealistic. Working with young people and using music, like, first of all, I need a lot of support. There's no way that I could carry it on my shoulders. And that's, like, if I get really honest with myself. And in order to gain that support, I find that the most effective way is to approach people with humility. Because if I approach people and just kind of like in my old sort of way of just expecting people to do things for me and sort of ordering people around or bossing them around, you know, that's how you end up alone under a bridge or in an abandoned factory, whether because they've left or because you've left due to the guilt and shame surrounding, like, the way that I behaved. So, you know, like, this process of learning what the word means, you know, and what it means to me, what it means to you. I've seen some people, and this is why I say that lately I've been doing some reflection on the word arrogance and what that means. I've seen some people who are very confident, and sometimes, like, they dance on the border of arrogance. But at the same time, in other areas of their life, I would consider them, particularly in recovery, I would consider them the one of the more humble people that I know. So I found that very interesting, and that's why I started to think about, like, well, what really does this mean to me? And then in the service work that I do in recovery and also in my creative life, which is outside of recovery, but it is working with other human beings, that service work has really drawn me into having to take a look at, like, okay, I'm not the center of the universe, and there are some people here, and albeit I may not like the way that they are, the way that they act, or the way that they talk, but the experience they have, and the knowledge they have, and the wisdom they have due to that experience is invaluable, and I could never buy that on the black market or anything, you know? There's no way for me to gain that other than to humbly approach them and ask for guidance, and so that's been a huge lesson for me, and it's improved my life significantly.
I poured my heart into a song, and when you hear, remember from the start, you won't be hearing just the words and tune of a song. You will be listening to my heart. I poured my heart into a song, and I'm afraid the words that shows are not so smart. I couldn't think of clever things to say in my song. I had to say it with my heart. If it's never played on the hit parade, it will still contain a heart that is beating true. If it's not a hit, take it, please, don't tear my song apart. For if you do, you won't be just destroying a song. You will be tearing up my
That was Artie Shaw, and I poured my heart into a song. Something a little different for you on Wings Over Water Creativity and Recovery Radio this week. I have a soft spot in my heart for swing and that old-time band music, so hope you enjoyed that. And now I take you back to the interview recorded in my Honda Fit earlier this week by me and my hostess, with the mostest co-hostess, Gypsy. And we're talking about humility and why it's a powerful quality in our lives.
So, why is humility a great quality for an artist? I think humility is a great quality for an artist because it allows us to keep showing up. And so, for example, if you are humble, you might be, and you're an actor, for example, say, I would just like to say, I'm sorry you guys aren't like physically in the car with us because we were driving through some beautiful farmland here in New Jersey at the moment. And it's also almost sunset, so it's just the light is really pretty. So anyway, if you're an actor, you just have to show up at auditions over and over and over again. If you're a writer, you know, you're gonna submit your work, and chances are great that you will be rejected more than you will be accepted. It's interesting what Gypsy was saying about arrogance and self-centeredness possibly being the opposite. I know that there's gigs that I haven't gotten that partly the humility that can help me in dealing with rejection, which is something that every artist is going to deal with, is to realize that sometimes it's just not about me. Sometimes, for example, they might have a bill that they're filling and they want it, like one of their goals might be to have a real mix, and maybe they already have someone else who's like already a female singer-songwriter. And although, of course, I think I'm completely unique, they might be like, okay, we already have one female singer-songwriter, let's get a blues band. And then in that case, it may not be about me. And so to not be self-centered. I've also gotten gigs, honestly, that when it was not about me. One of the better gigs I've ever gotten. I still have no idea why it is that I got that gig. I think in some ways to not take things personally is not only make you more peaceful and calm in life, but can make you more successful as an artist, because you're not going to be burning up a lot of energy in suffering around rejection. And it helps you to keep showing up again. I also have to say for myself personally, one of the reasons I've been able to become a much better musician in recovery is because I've had the humility to rehearse and to realize like what it takes for me in order to function at the level that I want to function at. And honestly, I'm not even there yet. Like, I have a bigger vision for myself. In the last year, I've realized that these voice exercises that I do, the warm-ups that I do, if I do the full warm-up, which is like 5 exercises, it's maybe like about 48 minutes of workout. If I do that whole vocal workout 3 or 4 times a week, then I can sing consistently a bunch of shows in a row and not end up, I was having an issue before that I was losing my voice after doing a bunch of shows in a row. And so, honestly, when I was drinking and doing drugs, my arrogance thought that I should just be able to go out and just do it without doing the background work. One of the teaching stories that I love is a story about the centipede. The centipede, someone goes up to the centipede and asks it how it learned how to walk. It's like, well, you know what? I don't really know. I've always been able to walk, so it never really thought about it. It stopped and thought about it, and it worked out like exactly how each leg moves. And while it was in that process of figuring all that out and breaking it down, during that time, it could barely walk at all because it was so overwhelmed with all of the different pieces and all the different parts of it. But once it got real clarity on that and worked out all the way through, then the centipede could dance, which is something that it never had been able to do before. So these are some ways in which humility can help us in our creativity. I think also relevant to recovery, one of the things that people say all the time when they're using is they say, I know, I know, I know. And I think one of the most powerful things we can say in recovery is, I don't know. That's a big shift to be able to have the humility to say that.
time it was, how sublime it was true. I didn't know what day it was, you held my hand. Warm like the month of May it was, and I say it was grand, grand to be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, feel your touch, hear your voice, say I'm all your own. I didn't know what year it was, life was no prize. I wanted love and here it was, shining out of your eyes. I'm wise and I know what time it is now.
That was once again Artie Shaw, this time with the track called I Didn't Know What Time It Was. I just put the word no into my query box there to see what I had in my iTunes library. So that's what we came up with, still in the Artie Shaw zone. Check him out. He's got so much great music.
I would love to talk for a second too, Gypsy, about what are some of the things we can do for ourselves to put us into a space where it's possible to let go of some of our arrogance and self-centeredness and to open up into experimenting with humility. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, the first and most obvious thing that comes to mind that I already talked a lot about is service, getting involved in service. But I was thinking as you were talking too, like, I mean, in life too, like, you know, I consider myself a musician. When I introduce myself to people, I say I'm a rapper and a spoken word poet. But I work 3 jobs, and 2 of those jobs are really humbling on a regular basis. You know, one of those jobs, I waitress. I work in an office doing stuff that I really can't stand. But I am so grateful to have a job. And I have to constantly remind myself, because sometimes that arrogance kicks in and I'm like, man, I shouldn't have to do this. I don't believe in this. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to support cat, whatever, you know, whatever it is that day that like makes me feel like I shouldn't have to work this job. But then I have to remind myself that like I have bills to pay and I'm not even getting them all covered yet, you know, and in order to do what I love, you know, I have to humble myself and I have to work these jobs that I may not want to work. So, you know, like sometimes I think like I've learned that through getting involved in service. And I've also learned that through the gratitude list and staying grateful. You know, anytime that I don't physically write down a gratitude list every day. I wish I would, because when I consistently write one down every day, I feel better. I feel more grateful. I feel like the arrogance doesn't kick up as often, feeling like I should have something or should not have to do something. You know, and also like really developing that relationship with yourself, you know, which is where I'm at. Because I've always been in a relationship, even as a kid, you know, I've heard, we've talked about before, always having like a best friend. And then once I got old enough, it was boyfriends, intimate relationships. And now that I am not in a relationship and I'm really developing that relationship with myself, I'm starting to really learn about loving myself and having a relationship with myself, but not being self-centered. And what I've learned, actually, because I think a lot of times we think that if we take ourselves to the massage parlor, if we get our nails done, or if we do something nice for ourselves, when we learn maladaptive behavior patterns, to use a little like treatment word for you there, a little therapeutic word there for you, maladaptive behavior patterns, when we learn those, we think that that's self-centered. But actually what I found out is that the more I cultivate that relationship with myself, the more that I spend a significant portion of my day in self-love, the more excited I am to see other people, and the more of a good friend I am, the more of an available human being. You know, I mean, the more I am to help the old lady out at the grocery store, because I'm not caught up in all these mental loops in my head, because during the time that I get to spend with myself, like, I'm really taking care of what I need to take care of. And so for me, you know, that's another tool that I've been learning a lot more about recently that's made me more of an effective human being in this community.
So I'm so glad you went to the self-love thing, because I really do think that, you know, if arrogance comes possibly from insecurity and fear, then it would just make sense that humility would come from feeling secure and loved. So, you know, I think it's interesting, again, I think I talked a couple of weeks ago about confidence being something that you can cultivate through action, through rehearsal, for example. And I feel the same way here, is that self-love is a cultivatable thing. One of the women who helps me in my recovery says to me, like, that I am responsible for the movie that's playing in my head. I'm the projectionist of the movie theater of my mind, and that the thought is the ancestor of the deed. So I need to pay attention to what I'm saying to myself inside my head, and surround myself with loving people, and take good care of myself, you know, having good food. Like, we just had two really good meals today. And when I am in this place, then I feel safe and I feel loved and I feel secure. It's so much easier to be humble, or to not have to go into arrogance, not have to overblow my accomplishments or underestimate the need that I have to prepare so that I can do my job correctly. So that's been a lot of us talking. We were just talking in the car about wanting to really emphasize the listening to the listeners section. And so here's our question for you. We would like to hear from you. You can do it on Facebook or by sending me an email. We would like to hear from you about people that you can think of who are in the culture, who are known in the culture, who are both really confident and really humble. And so it could also be like examples of people who have taken their success and used it for the common good in some ways. So can you help us out here and give us some examples of people that combine this kind of magical combination of vanilla and chocolate in being confident and humble?
You've been listening to City of Angels, Creativity and Recovery, the Wings Over Water Show. I'm Kathy Moser. I'd like to give a special thanks to my co-hostess, Gypsy, who helped me this week. We were driving down to Philadelphia to send a new record of mine out to radio, something I never had the confidence to do previously or the humility to ask for help. So we look forward to hearing from you. Remember, tell your friends about City of Angels Recovery Radio. There are shows on every single day of the week. And by speaking of that, have a great week. Okay, bye.